Join the Football Pod on Off The Ball.
You don't have that many years as a player. You can't scratch off a year and have a bad year just because your coaches are gone. You have to be strong enough to be able to say, we're still going to have a great year.
Join in the obsession and tune in to the Football Pod on Off The Ball in partnership with AIB.
Now then, in the LGFA Championship, Kerry are into the All-Ireland quarterfinals after beating Cork at the weekend. It was a pretty crazy game, and I'm delighted to say that Kerry forward Niamh Ní Chonaicheoir is with us on the line. Niamh, how are you getting on?
Great, yeah. I'm delighted to be into the quarterfinal now.
That was quite something, wasn't it, at the weekend? Down by 6 points at half-time to turn that around and then to win the game 5-7 to 2-9. What the hell happened in that second half?
Yeah, it was definitely a game of two halves for us. It actually felt like we were just chasing Cork's shadows in the first half. We couldn't get hands on. But to be fair, like, as in, players took a lot of responsibility at half time, and we came out and stepped it up in the second half and really kind of showed people what we're made of and when we play properly.
What does players taking responsibility look like? Is it the coaches saying nothing in the dressing room at halftime and people giving some harsh truths to their fellow players out there, or how does that work?
Yeah, both. Obviously, like, when you're in different parts of the field, you see different things. So it might be Mary Ellen in goal on kickouts, so we're not moving. It might just be a case of we're lacking intensity, which is a big thing, which we were lacking in the first half that we identified at halftime, which really needed to be upped. Just communication in terms of what we're doing and what we need to do better, really.
There must be a real sense of confidence to know that you can make those alterations at halftime and you can actually reach a level that you would have expected of yourself. That obviously comes from years of arriving to this stage and probably years of winning big games and winning tight games, right?
Yeah, I think over the years, like, we've had our own heartbreaks, but we've come to develop as players. Like, you've the older girls like Anna Galvin, Aisling O'Connell. You've girls like Shifra and Danielle, who are still only 23 years of age, who are big leaders on the team. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, you're able to step up and give your piece of advice. Might be the Mairish, because on the sideline, they'll give their info, their input. But like, it doesn't always work that way for us. If you look at the Munster final, we had those harsh truths at halftime and we still couldn't put it together. Whether that was just us underperforming or Waterford not allowing us to do what we wanted to. So we were just by the skin of our teeth at the end of the game. We pulled that one out of the bag, but, like, you know, in future it would be preferable if we could avoid waiting till half time to have those harsh words.
Does this year feel like there's a difference when it comes to how other teams view you? Is there more of a target on your back now that you're All-Ireland champions?
In a way there could be, but, like, there's such tight competition for the All-Ireland this year. When you look at the other groups like Waterford and Dublin drawing, Armagh and Meath, Drew as well. Like, there's absolutely nothing between the teams. So, like, in a way, yeah, as champions, they're probably after us. But, like, there's absolutely nothing between any of the teams going forward.
Does motivation on your part change? Like, how do you manage to keep that hunger, having been after that one thing for so long?
Well, a lot of us are still quite young and, you know, you're not just going to cut it off after 1 year getting that medal. You know, once you get a taste of it, once you want more. And we're very fortunate, the group of girls that are there, how successful we've been. We've 3 league titles, 2 Munsters now, and 1 All-Ireland, obviously. So, like, you know, once you get that taste for success, you don't like losing and you don't want to go back to being in relegation playoffs and times like that. They weren't... not half as enjoyable, I suppose.
No, I can't imagine they were.
No.
I also suspect there's a sense of trying to turn a good team into a great team. It is a cliche, but it does exist that they say that great teams win multiple All-Irelands. And there are so many great teams that we've seen in this century in the sport, whether it's that Meath team most recently, obviously the Dublin team, more obviously the Cork team, and even Mayo at the start of the century did back-to-back. So it does seem to be a thing in LGFA that you will join that company if you manage to get another All-Ireland. Is that something you've spoken about or think about?
Not really. Like, obviously coming back this year, a lot of girls, you're not coming back just to for the sake of it. Like, you're coming back because you want to win and you're coming back because you believe there's potential in the group to do that. And obviously it took us 3 years before to get there and to fully reach that potential. But obviously, like, you're playing with a bit of confidence this year, knowing you have that title, and you're just kind of leaving it all out there in hopes that you can retain it.
You mentioned there the process of playing a relegation playoff and those tough years earlier in your career. It is quite the turnaround when you look at the trajectory of this Kerry team, particularly between 2021 and 2022, to go from that relegation playoff in 21 to an All-Ireland final in 22. Would you say that was the part of the graph that was closest to vertical on this journey that you're all on?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I remember Louise Galvin and Emma Coslow were just in that year in 2022. And I think it was early in the season, maybe during the league, we had one team meeting and you had to put down like your hopes for the year, how far you think the team will get. And it was Emma actually turned around and said that I wouldn't be here if I didn't think that we could win in Ireland, if I didn't think it was in this group. And it was just, it was kind of then for me personally, obviously the previous year, it was a relegation battle. You're saying, right, if they think that this group is good enough, then why not? And then we kind of had this motto of like, why not us? Why can't we potentially be Ireland champions? And it wasn't for us that year, but I think it's having the mindset as well to believe in yourself and believe in the team that you're good enough. And if you apply yourselves and your game plan, that like you can do it.
Did that take any convincing on your part, or were you all in as soon as you heard a couple of the more senior players just say it?
No, yeah, once you hear the older girls and like you can see the belief within the team, and there was a big change after that point, you could see within other girls as well. There was just a change in mindset, like, yeah, we are good enough and we can go toe-to-toe with some of the best teams. And to be fair, like we were playing Division 2 that year as well. So like you can, we won Division 2 that year as well. So like you're kind of coming off that high of being successful. Do you know, like you don't want to start losing after that. So that that belief within the team, it's a driving force kind of when you're trying to go forward.
It is something really powerful. I get the sense when somebody just says something like that out loud, that feels ambitious, and maybe from the outside looking in, it could seem overly ambitious. Like we've seen it in multiple different sports over the last number of years. Like one of the more famous examples is when Pádraig Joyce takes over as Galway manager. And I know they haven't won an All-Ireland, but when he takes over, it didn't really feel like they were in the conversation whatsoever to win the All-Ireland because Dublin were so dominant. But he went out and in his first interviews, he said, my plan and my aim is to win the All-Ireland with Galway. And people kind of scoffed at that outside the camp. But I suspect the power of his words inside the camp at least motivated the lads to get to the place where they're now in the conversation every single year, it seems. And that language, that kind of the assertiveness around it seems to be really important for high-performance athletes.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a big thing there, as you were saying, people outside the camp not believing in them. I think a big thing is within your camp that there's the same beliefs and being able to block out the outside noise of media, just people on the street saying, oh, I don't think he can do it. Blocking that out and just keeping the beliefs that are within the team and within the whole group and using that to drive you forward, you know, not being put off by other people and their opinions.
Can you use that for fuel at the same time, though, if somebody is writing you off?
Yeah, so like that's also a personal thing. Like if it's something that bothers you, you have to be able to block it out. But you know, if you hear someone say, oh, I don't think Kerry are great, like, you know, even just to prove them wrong, it is, for certain players, that would be a big driving force.
Is that, would you be one of those certain players?
Kind of in a way, yeah.
Has there been any moments over the last, say, 12 months where you've heard something and said, listen, that is going to drive me on now?
Well, I think probably at the beginning of this year, there was such a turnaround in players within our group. Joe Louise retiring, there was probably a big thing of like, Kerry are going to miss those players. Like, are they going to be able to go again this year when there's such a turnaround in the group? But like, fair play to the girls that have come into the panel, they've really stepped it up. And, you know, we've built that team again where it's not just 15 players. We have that impact off the bench. So I'd like to think as a panel, you know, we're proving those people that doubted us wrong.
It's remarkable, really. Yeah, the new players who have come in and the departure of Louise Nimura Hurtig after last year. I know that she was a hero of yours growing up as well. That must have been an interesting dynamic to know that you've got to appreciate this career that's coming to an end while also at the same time realise that there has to be a moment where you park that and move on and kind of forget about her in a way. How do you actually deal with that?
Well, I'm very fortunate. I actually also work with Louise.
So, okay, right.
You know, so it's not, she's not finished with me yet, unfortunately, for her. So like getting to see her every day, and like you can see the difference it has in her life as well, not having training, and you know, like, but she still keeps such an interest in terms of coming to all the games and, you know, asking how we're getting on in training and stuff. But like you do as a team have to move on, and like you have to find someone to fill that slot of anyone that left the team, but especially like Louise, corner forward. And to be fair, in terms of scoring, Schieffer and Danielle have really stepped up. Rachel was flying throughout the whole Munster Championship. I can't remember how much she scored. But herself, Jade, and like any of the girls, Quivel always chip in with a point or two. And so same with Niamh Carmody. So like, to be fair, players have taken over that kind of that load, and we're not relying on any one person.
And also there's a bit of a leadership void there as well. And I presume you'd be one of the candidates to step into more of a leadership role when somebody like that retires, given you've been around the panel for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, as in, I'm very fortunate because also playing club with Louise, I've kind of taken on that role of supplying into the forwards. So I've always kind of been more out the field and kind of, as we call it, and sometimes it's the quarterback role of just trying to organise the forwards in terms of moving, that I try and kind of take that role from centre forward. So like, it's probably something I've been developing with confidence, and just, I think the more years you're around, the more comfortable you get within the group. So kind of have taken a little bit more this year, I suppose, of that role.
What do yourself and Louise do for a living?
So we're both teachers.
Okay, very
secondary
good.
Secondary school teachers. So yeah. Yeah, she's, unfortunately, I kind of copied her, followed her down the P in Irish route.
Very good. Are you teaching in West Kerry or whereabouts?
In Tralee.
In Tralee.
In RC Montauk, yeah.
So are you teaching the exact same subjects?
Yeah.
In the same school?
Yeah, in the same school, yeah.
Who's the better teacher?
I followed her. Louise, definitely. So she's natural girl gore.
But so she was teaching in Montauk, and then you followed her over to Tralee?
Yeah, so a maternity leave became available in the school the year I graduated college. So she thought it'd be great crack if I followed, and now I'm kind of, I fell in love with the place, so I'm still there.
Brilliant, brilliant. That's amazing. And do you talk football?
At times, but sometimes it's kind of nice to leave it at the door, and you know, you're in work and that's that. And to be fair, a lot of the staff are very good. They wouldn't pry about it or ask you too much.
Yeah. Like, if Louise asked you a question about the inner workings of the camp, are you offering all that information, or are you like, listen, we have to set boundaries here?
No, and Louise understands that, like, from down through the years, like, you, what happens in camp stays in camp, and that's just it. Like, she would get the, like, I'm good mood, I'm happy, training's going really well, or if training was really hard and tough and intense, like, she'd know straight away, like, oh, training's tough, depending on the time of year.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. How does the dynamic in terms of being an intercounty footballer now change for you as we enter into the summer break from teaching? Do you get to go semi-professional or feel semi-professional at this point, or do you have other bits and pieces going on?
No, so this is actually my first year. Usually I teach in summer colleges, the Irish summer colleges in Kirkcudbright.
Right.
But this year I took a break, so it's a bit surreal not having so much time. It's actually allowing me way more opportunities in terms of recovery, get into the sauna, the sea. I have more time if I want to take a bag of footballs and go kicking. So I'm still getting used to it in the first few weeks, but it's a nice lifestyle.
I can imagine. It must be a game changer as well.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, especially when you're coming into championship, like school, especially the last few weeks, can be kind of draining. And I don't know how people continuously do the 9 to 5. You're going to work, you're coming to training. Especially the girls travelling from Cork, like they're true, like the dedication they show to come straight from work down, training, shower, eat, back in the car and drive back up to Cork, like it's tough.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I'm interested as well in kind of the dynamic of, you know, being a teacher while also being an intercounty footballer, because it's something that's been spoken about a little bit in the last few weeks when we're discussing the calendar and the idea that we don't have the All-Ireland finals anymore in September, and the connection between school and, say, Sam Maguire being paraded around the place, or the All-Ireland Championship in ladies football, or in camogie or hurling at any kind of stage around the country. What do you think about that? Like, do you kind of miss the idea that you're not going to be in a sort of public-facing role as a teacher when you're playing intercounty football at the moment, and that your entire season is going to be finished before you go back to the classroom?
Personally, I do like the way it's finished, because obviously the week after the All-Ireland, 2 weeks, you get your chance to go on your little holiday before you go back to school if you want. You have your week to celebrate. You're not worrying about getting time off work. So as a teacher, that's ideal. Obviously, if you're working a normal job, you have to go back to work. But no, like, we still got plenty of opportunities to bring the Brendan and Martin around to primary schools, to secondary schools. And we still got an amazing welcome, even though it was months after winning him. But no, I, in a way, I do like the way it is now. It gives you that downtime before going back to work.
And have you noticed an appreciable shift in, say, the students recognising you as a Kerry footballer now compared to, say, 2 or 3 years ago? I know I'm venturing into COVID there, but post-COVID to now, let's say.
There would be, in a way, well, if you're next to near Louise, everyone sees the ginger hair and they, you kind of stand out in that way. There would be with some, especially locally around Ingle, the primary school kids, even just from the visits with Brendan Martin or the homecoming we had a few days after the All-Ireland, you would get the little kids coming up to you and they'd have your nickname and everything looking for your signature.
Yeah, what is your nickname?
My nickname's Cracker.
And so where does Cracker come from?
It's from my dad. So unfortunately, Niamh is a very common name. We had 4 Niamh starting last week. So my dad has always been known as Cracker. So I'd be Niamh Cracker and my little brother then would be Sean Cracker. So it's kind of a, it can be confusing around West Kerry at times for some people, but it just stuck on the football field, kind of picked it up in college. Fiona Tagney'd know my family from home. So she kind of stuck it to me in college and it just travelled down then with the Kerry girls that were in UL. And then it just kind of stuck for the last 3 years.
Where did your dad get the name?
He was fishing down in Waterford and I presume maybe did something a bit silly and got the nickname of being probably cracked, being Cracker.
Right.
There was something, so I haven't really gotten the true story off my parents, but it's something along those lines.
How close did you come to getting pulled into the fishing industry as well to follow in the parents' footsteps?
Oh, no, not at all. I don't even eat fish, unfortunately, for my father. He's not too impressed. But no, he's a trawler, so he'd be out at sea for about 5 or 6 days at a time. So
okay,
it was never really going to be the lifestyle for me. With football, it's kind of a hard, you have to pick or choose.
Right, that would be tricky. So he's not actually based around West Kerry at all. He's actually further ashore.
Yeah, so the boat is based in Dingle, but they fish off the coast of Cork and Waterford, maybe a bit up by Galway.
You spoke about one element of the upheaval from last year to this year in losing Louise Ni Mhuire Hurtig to retirement. What about the new management ticket in Mark Burke and the new manager? Like, has that changed significantly or has it all been pretty seamless from your standpoint? I never quite know whether it's better for a change to come after a great level of success or whether the change should come before the success actually happens. What's your experience been like?
No, the transition has been seamless. To be fair to Mark, he's always asked, like, okay, you played this game last year, what was the method you used? You know, like, he hasn't come in and completely taken over and changed everything in the style of the way we play. Like, we're still play like Kerry, we still want to kick the ball, move the ball quick, that kind of style. So it has been seamless. Obviously, it's different going from the joint managers there in Declan to kind of the main voice being Mark. But for us as players, it's been seamless, and like the older girls, kind of a leadership group, would always be in contact talking to him, and Joe, like that group really helped to make things seamless.
Yeah, the other big change as well is Kayleigh Cronin's departure to Australia. You getting much FOMO looking at the Instagram stories?
I know, like, to be fair, it's sport. I'd imagine Kayleigh will excel at, like, if you found out you were marking Kayleigh at training, you'd nearly be petrified going because you get a shoulder and you go flying. So I'm absolutely buzzing, can't wait to see her playing. She'll be brilliant. It's a big difference having her centre back. Kayleigh is she's very good organising. Like, as a wing forward, if I was tracking back, she'd tell you exactly where you need to be when you need to be. You know, there was no second guessing anything. So losing her for the few weeks there was a bit of a difference, but sure, then Emma came in and has stepped up to the plate really well.
Yeah, has there ever been a temptation for you to head down or explore that opportunity?
No, teaching has been kind of my passion, something I've always wanted to do. So I'm quite happy where I am playing football for Kerry. Is that, like, it's what you grew up wanting to do. Like, so happy out.
Since the AFLW has started to become a real opportunity for Irish players, have you got the sense that we've kind of upped our game a little bit in this country? Because, like, a few years ago, I would have always made the case that the women going to Australia are at a far greater risk of moving, and we're at a far greater risk of losing the women because they just don't get the same treatment as the men here and don't get the same level of opportunities to play in the best facilities or at the best time of year or whatever the case may be. So it kind of feels like we've needed to up our game in order to ensure that it doesn't become an exodus. Has that been your experience?
Things have been improving, I think, in the ladies' game bit by bit every year. Like, going from obviously underage, you're going to training, you could be anywhere, like you actually don't know where you are. Training could be cancelled, you mightn't be able to get a field, to the way we are now, like you're getting grub after every training. The facilities are amazing. There's just such a change. Like you're heading into the league, you get your tracksuit, you get your half zip. So there are things when you're underage and you're just dreaming of, like when we were underage, you're looking at the Kerry senior ladies who probably weren't getting a whole pile, training was tough. And then as you're stepping forward, it's such a jump going from minor where you might be paying a fiver to train to going into the senior panel where you're getting grub after training, you might get a pair of gloves from Murphy's. There is a big difference, but hopefully the ladies game will continue to develop, whether it's because of the AFLW or not, I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, there's probably a good level of self-sustainable motivation here, independent of Australia as well. It's a broad enough one, but what's the next step? What's the thing that we're missing, or that you're missing in the LGFA at the moment? I know there's the big moment of amalgamation, which will hopefully happen sooner rather than later. But even something small, something specific, what sort of improvements would you like to see in terms of what's available to women in the game?
To be fair, I think we get so much. Like you're having league finals in Croke Park, All Ireland final day in Croke Park. Like they're things you dream of as a child, whether you're a boy or a girl. That's where you want to be. There's nothing really, like personally to me, that stands out, because I'm probably within the bubble of Kerry ladies and we're being treated so well that I don't really see a whole pile missing. Like Nora, she's amazing. She'd be at every training, going to every game in the kid fan. Like we're treated so well down here that I don't really see a whole pile missing.
Yeah, it seems that Kerry have kind of got their house in order in that regard. Like I'm sure that there might have been things missing when we go back to like prior to 2021, when we saw counties like Meath and Dublin and obviously historically Cork excelling. And you'd often wonder, why is the traditional powerhouse of Kerry, who've had great teams historically, not being able to stay in their slipstream even? And then that's just changed on its head completely to the point where you're All-Ireland champion. So I'm sure there's been a lot of work done behind the scenes to try and get you up to that level and ensuring equality, basically.
Yeah, to be fair, Darren Declan, when they came in, obviously they had a strong background in the men's game. They came in, I think it was 2019, they were our minor managers. And I think they were a bit taken aback by the difference between the men and the women's. And they fought tooth and nail for us for the 4 or 5 years they were with us to get us everything that in their eyes we deserved. Sean Walsh was in as chairman at the time, and he the same way fought for us. And like Nora's taken over from Sean now, and it's just kept going and kept getting better for us.
Just a couple of other things before we wrap up. What do you make of the Hooter in the men's game compared to the women's game? That's one thing I wanted to ask you.
From our perspective, I like the way you can see, right, there's 15 seconds. We just have to keep them out for another 15 seconds. It's not a case of waiting until the ball goes out of play. So personally, it's probably just because that's all we've ever experienced. It's a lot nicer knowing exactly when the game is going to end compared to when you're playing off a ref and you're waiting for the ref to blow the whistle, that kind of thing. It's a lot nicer knowing exactly how long is left and how long you have to give it your all for.
So the one in the women's game is better, the hard end?
Would be my preference, yeah.
And generally speaking, what do you make of the men's game? What do you make of the men's game at the moment in terms of the changes they've made?
I think the new rules have really... I think it's made a big difference, like especially the solo and goal free kick. Teams can be cynical, and they are ladies football as well, where they might foul you to slow you down and slow down the game. Whereas if you can take your solo and get the ball moving again, like that's a big change. Obviously, when you have players, Kerry have super forwards, that two-pointer, if you have players that can kick from distance, let them at it, reward them. So if you're only getting 1 point for a kick from 45 metres out versus 20, you're obviously going to opt for the safer option. So it's brilliant that they're being rewarded for that, taking that risk now.
Yeah, it has been a bit of a revelation this summer. Listen, Niamh, you've been generous with your time. Thanks a million for taking the time out of your day to speak to us, and very best of luck in the quarterfinals.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast, we had this.
Did I correctly hear/read somewhere that you're known as the Indiana Jones of sports writing?
I'll take it to the bank. I'm in less glamorous surroundings now. I'm in Lowestoft. So, you know, Yeah. I'm not sure if Harrison Ford has ever visited Lowestoft.
And there was also some of this.
You know when you have American cousins and they come over and they say, well, what is hurling? And that's the game that I put on. Like, I don't, like, people talk about the 2017 All-Ireland against Waterford and so on, but that 2015 game was probably one of the most memorable games, I would say. I was involved in anyway.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off The Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.